Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, on the podcast is former Scotland captain Al Kellock and current Scotland captain Rachel Malcolm. Joining us on the podcast is Dylan Naismith, a former player at Cumnock Rugby Club, to tell his tale after his cardiac arrest on the pitch in 2017. And all the way from the States, two of our newest fans, Joey and Justin Bedard, join us to talk us through the experience of being a Scotland fan. Well, joining us now on the podcast is Dylan Naismith. Dylan, how are you?
Yes, very well. Yourself?
Very well, thank you. Very well. With me, as always, Al and Rachel here on the podcast. Now, Dylan, we're going to put a video this week, which will detail more around your rugby journey. But, you know, let's just go straight to it. I mean, back in 2017, you had a pretty tough time on the rugby pitch, didn't you? Just talk us through what happened to you in 2017.
So 2017, we were playing at East Kilbride, and I think it was the third or fourth game of the conference, and during that game I had a cardiac arrest, which then led to me getting to hospital in Hairmyres up there. Spent a few days there, was then transferred down to Ayr Hospital, a wee bit closer to home, and then I was diagnosed with a heart disease called AIVC, and I was then implanted with a cardiac defibrillator, which basically keeps me alive if anything goes south. So I think that's the kind of the simplest way I can explain it.
What age would you have been in 2017 when that happened to you?
17.
On the video itself, I've seen it, and I know we're putting out just in the next few days, but it's an incredible story, and you talk fantastically, very openly about what went on. It must have been incredibly scary. We've all been injured on the rugby part, but that's just different level. How much of it were you aware of what was going on, and how much was just about trying to get through that process of people looking after you?
So I just saying it's a wee bit different to any other injury. It's an injury that you never kind of recover from. That's for the rest of my life now. This injury, and I can't play rugby anymore because of it. But and the coaching side of things now, of it, and it's going great now in terms of that.
What is your role these days?
So right now, currently assistant development officer at Cumnock Rugby Club, and soon to be the new Cumnock Rugby programme through the Robert Burns Academy, as well as going to university. I get set into third year university for sports coaching, so that's pretty cool. Excited for that as well. Strength and conditioning programme as well. Going to be taking a kind of lead role there through the under 16s and 18s. Just coming up with programmes and monitoring progress and stuff like that through there, so that's quite cool as well.
Sounds as if you've really channelled all your energies now towards developing players and bringing players through. Is that something that really drives you now?
Oh, definitely. I kind of had the mindset when I started getting into coaching about turning players into the player that I could have been. So it's not about, for me, being jealous that I can't play anymore, or I'm not in the position that these players are in. I'm just put all my focus into developing these players into the best that they can be, pushing them on as far as they can go, and trying to help them follow their dreams, hopefully, of becoming a professional rugby player one day.
And you know, where you're based down in the Cumnock area, how did you get involved in rugby? You know, traditionally not one of the most well-known rugby hubs in particular, but how did you get involved in the game, Dylan?
So I was a football player up until I was 12 years old, got sick of football, saw the light, gave rugby a shot. the development officer down there, Harry Riley, probably know him. He asked me if I wanted to start playing rugby, recruited me in. As soon as I picked up the ball, absolutely loved it. And played from 2012, came through the school of rugby program, and then started with the club as well, up until under 18s, where I was unfortunately unable to play anymore. So aye, that was, certainly wasn't a player that came through minis and midis, micros and minis, and kind of picked it up in midi rugby, so yeah.
And what was it about the game that you liked? What was it that you just, you said you picked the ball and you just loved it? Was it, what was it about rugby that you just, this is great, this is it?
Just, you feel free, you can just, I like the evasion side of rugby, so I was a player that was, didn't seek contact a lot, probably until under 16s, under 18s when I became a forward. But settling my younger days, playing centre and wing and stuff like that, loved the evasion side of it. And then on the defensive side of it, loved the contact aspect, tackling especially, loved not at first anyway, but eventually channeling my aggression into tackling, and I loved that as well about it. It wasn't something that you could do in football as easy, so it was for me brilliant that you could do it in rugby.
You're clearly very passionate about it, and clearly you're a passionate player as well. How do you find that in the coaching element? Are you able to control that, or are you able to live that through the players that you're bringing through?
So, for me, as a player or as a coach, you should be passionate about what you do. And it's trying to bring that passion out the players as well, because it will not be something that even probably crosses your mind, but you don't know at any time if it could be taken away or not. So, when you are playing, play with passion for as long as you can, as much as you can. Because for me, I obviously learned that it can be taken away at any time. So put everything into it when you can just now.
I completely agree. Sport is an emotional business. There's no point in taking the emotion out of it. Have you taken Mark Bennett up on his offer of getting you into Edinburgh yet?
Yes.
Good.
I was absolutely buzzing when he messaged me on Facebook Messenger, and straight away doing up his offer, and I was like, yeah, I'll come, just give me a time and date and I'll be there, and then obviously coronavirus, then it's back, and so I think we're still on for when it's all over. And
You are still on. He's just texted me. I phoned him last night to chat about the fact we had you on, and he just tried to phone me back when we were chatting live, and he just texted me saying that they let him know that the offer is very much still there as soon as it's able to be taken up. So take him up, pick his brain, get to meet all those guys, and I'm sure you'll go back with lots of good ideas.
Brilliant. And just, I think for our listeners as well, there is a connect. Obviously, Mark Bennett. But did he play at Cumnock Rugby Club? Was that the connection? Did he? Is that how he kind of knows of Dylan's story and knows of the club? Is that right?
Yeah, yes. Dylan.
Yep. So he came through, right through minis. I'm not sure if he played micros, but he certainly played minis. Played all his midi rugby up until under 18s, I think. And then he moved to air, and then it was kind of pathway through, obviously, to where he's at today. But I played at Cumnock, I think, for over 10 years. So
yeah, it's not bad getting an offer like that from an Olympic silver medalist, though, is it, Dylan?
No, I know. Brilliant, man. Couldn't believe it.
In the video that we're going to put out for everybody to see, you know, it's really touching. It's really powerful. You know, the way, and as Al said, the way you tell your story is brilliant, because it can only be a hugely difficult time for you. But in that video, there's other people talking about you as well. Like there's coaches as well. What do you want to say to the people that were around the club that day when it happened and helped you out of those early stages in that incident?
So, obviously, it's it's something that you can never repay these guys and what they did that day. And a lot of credit goes to Rob Donald. So that was the guy that delivered CPR on me. But there was six other coaches there. I think there was two other Cumnock and three Scobride coaches. So I obviously don't know what they were doing at the time because I was unconscious. But I mean, these guys obviously phoned the ambulance. They got everybody away for the situation. So nobody was panicked. Got everybody back at the changing rooms. Probably got me warm and stuff like that. Got a sheet or a few jackets underneath me because it was a rainy day as well, pretty cold. And then when the ambulance eventually showed, these guys would have been signalling them up where to come to help me out. So, no, as I say, it's unrepayable what these guys have done for me. And it's certainly something I'll never forget for as long as I live.
It's a pretty, obviously very serious injury, but to go through it at such a young age, did you find you had to grow up pretty quickly afterwards in terms of how you had to adapt your lifestyle and things?
Definitely. I think at 17, for a lot of boys especially, unclear of what you want to do. If you're someone like me that was really, really passionate about sport and stuff like that, that was your focus. That was kind of everything that you channeled your concentration into and your time. So I didn't really think about career-wise and stuff like that. I had an idea of what I wanted to do. It was either the Marines or a fireman, but obviously that changed pretty fast after the cardiac arrest. And then had to think about different career choices and stuff like that. So definitely, getting just that aspect, you had to grow up pretty quick. Mindset had to change. Started to think or needing to have to think further down the line rather than right now, right here, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Dylan, we're obviously living in slightly different circumstances at the moment and everybody has to adapt. How does that affect your role? Are you able to still have some communication with the kids that you'd be looking to bring through?
So on the module, one of the parts that we've done just last session there was the 3 R's, so roadblock, review, reset, and we used my video for that, which I thought was brilliant. We get the boys to watch the video and a link on YouTube and let them kind of discuss it for a few minutes, brought them back in and then went through the different stages of the 3 R's. So it was brilliant to have them interact through my video. I don't know, it's just I don't know, man.
That must give you immense pride, like that. Like that video, it's an incredible watch. It's 10 minutes of just pure honesty. You talking about the incredible journey you've been through. Now, for you to then be able to use that as a learning tool, that's fantastic. So, the more power to you.
Yeah, I think as a young player, that's something that would, you know, get you a lot of respect from the kids, well, young adults that you're coaching, and get a lot more buy-in as well. So I think to have someone like you as a role model who's kind of had pretty serious adversity and come back even stronger and done something really positive is amazing for them to see, and to have that video as a tool is brilliant as well.
Well, Dylan Naismith, it's been brilliant having you here on the podcast. And we said this week the video will go out detailing your story in far more detail. But for now, thank you very much for joining us in the podcast. And stay safe. We'll speak to you soon.
Dylan, brilliant. Thanks very much.
Cheers, then.
Thank you.
Now, last week on our social media channels, we received this message from two of our newest fans based in America. And off the back of it, we invited both Justin and his son Joey onto the podcast for a chat.
On this last weekend, where you're showing classic Scotland rugby games, the 2018 Calcutta Cup and the 2019 Calcutta Cup, my son Joey and I wanted to say thank you for all of the games that you've posted over the weekends during the COVID pandemic. Shortly before it started, I was at the Scotland-France 2026 Nations game, and after my experience in Edinburgh, I thought I would be a Scotland fan forever. But after seeing all of the games that you posted online for us so that we could keep doing our family Saturday night rugby night, you really helped us get through this pandemic. We really appreciate all the Scotland games, all the Edinburgh games, all the Glasgow games. So from Justin Bedard and Joey Bedard here in the United States, we really wanted to say on this last weekend, thank you so much. You really helped us, and we really appreciate it. We were Scotland fans before, just because I went to that game against France, but we'll be Scotland fans forever because of everything you guys did to help us get through this pandemic. So thank you very much. Joey, you want to say thank you?
Thank you.
Thank you very much again.
Well, I'm delighted to say that joining us now on the podcast, all the way from the States, is Justin Bedard. Justin, thank you very much for joining us. Quickly, what time is it there? I know it must be a little bit earlier for you over there.
Oh, it's about 7:05 on a beautiful morning.
Nice, nice. And just remind us again, where are you just now?
I'm in Maryland, a small town called Smithsburg, about an hour and a half northwest of Washington, D.C.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, again, thank you very much for coming on. Now, we've played the clip to everybody to hear the message you sent to us with your son, Joey, which was just brilliant to hear that what we're doing here at Scottish Rugby is really, you know, helping people through these difficult times. But just talk us through your kind of your rugby journey. I know that you, you're now a Scotland fan. You mentioned that in your, on your video. And you were at the Six Nations game against France, weren't you? How did you find that?
Oh, it was wonderful. I mean, I followed the Six Nations for, gosh, over 15, probably close to 20 years now. And that was the first time I ever got to get to a game. And it was just a beautiful experience. The food was great. The people were great. I mean, it's unique to rugby that you walk into the stadium and no matter who you're supporting, everyone's high-fiving, everyone's chatting, everyone's hugging, everyone's playing, everyone's talking. You know, you don't get that in most sports. It's mostly staring down the opposition with, you know, the 1,000-yard stare and and not talking.
Yeah, that's true. It's a whole new world, isn't it? And you mentioned you've been following rugby for quite a bit of time then, so I'm sure you've watched a couple of Owls games in the past then, if you've been following for maybe 15 odd years.
Yeah, I would have. I'm sorry, I couldn't remember you specifically, Al, in any games that you played in, although we do have one connection. We are one degree of separation, that my university coach refereed you in an IRB game against Russia in 2009.
Wow.
Scotland A.
There you go.
All right. Well, you're one step ahead of me because I don't quite remember playing Russia in 2009, but that doesn't mean anything.
Scotland A. And he said he remembers having a conversation about Russia not grounding a try, that he agreed with you because you were towering over him because he's not the biggest of guys.
The slight recollection of that game might have been down in the borders. It might have been at Netherdale, but I would need to look back as well. What about your son, Joey? Is he picking up a rugby ball? Does he play a wee bit, or is he just a fan at the moment, or where does that sit?
Little bit of both. I had him signed up for his first touch rugby team when he was 4.5. And then we moved. And so he played about a season, you know, just the little kids kind of on the sideline doing a little bit of training. And then we moved about too far away. So I'm still looking for a new club. But it's amazing how it's grown here in the U.S. Just you guys were asking me about my rugby journey. I mean, I started playing in university when I was 19. I'd never touched a rugby ball before. And it's kind of a little known fact, but most universities here in the U.S., and there are thousands, have club rugby teams. I mean, there are thousands of club rugby teams that everybody just joins when they get to school. At least that was my experience. And I, like I said, never touched a rugby ball until I was 19 years old. That was the pattern for everyone. You know, everyone on my team came to university, discovered rugby, started playing, fell in love with it. And then fast forward 15 years into the future, and half of the team, when they joined, had played rugby in high school. And so in a 15-year span, it went from 90% of every team not having touched a rugby ball until they arrived at university to half of teams playing in high school. And just so, I mean, it's been explosive and exponential growth around here. So now there are children's clubs you know, all around, I think I'm within 2 hour drive of about 10 or 12 of them, for kids from 4 all the way up through, you know, 18.
What's driven that? Has that been, I mean, we talk about the fact that the sevens came into the Olympics, and from an American point of view, the sevens team has been a real generator of numbers, of talent, of success as well. The American sevens team has been fantastic. So I suppose these kids now have got people who they would look up to, aspire to be. Has that been a big driving factor?
I think so. I think it's getting more notoriety. I also think, you know, we're seeing it on TV. ESPN played Super Rugby for years as the Pro 14 now. You have NBC playing Six Nations and then Premiership. But the feeling I have is it's really just we reached critical mass with everybody, all these people like myself who play in university. And then, you know, there are a local, I know in Washington, D.C., there's an amateur club competition, you know, so where professionals would just organize their own, you know, club and then play interclub play matches. But, you know, the club I played for in universities, we celebrated our 50th anniversary in 2017. So there was 50 years of people playing rugby at my university. And so I think you just reach that point where enough people had graduated, enough people loved the sport, and then they realized there was nothing going on in their area. So they started a club or they started a youth program. And then it's just grown from there.
What was the factor that made you kind of start Sports Scotland then? So why choose Scotland over any other country?
I'll admit I am new, because I, you know, for years having followed the Six Nations, I, out of all the teams, I probably supported Ireland, because like half of Americans here, I have some kind of Irish ancestry, and I was just looking for some kind of hook. But we would always go to pubs and watch every single game, you know, with my alumni, the Alumni Association from my university club. I started taking my son when he was 18 months old, and he'd be in the pub at 9 a.m. having a cup of milk while, you know, I'm drinking a pint of Guinness responsibly. And then we'd have breakfast, and it just continued for seven years now. And then when I went over to the Six Nations game, it was to visit a friend. I made a deal with him. I'd come over and help him fix up his new flat. And if he got us tickets to a Six Nations game. And so it just kind of fell into place. I went to Murray Field. I loved the experience. It was great. You know, an amazing game beating France, who was undefeated. And just the warmth, the people, the atmosphere was great. I fell in love with haggis. I will defend haggis until the day I die. That's a wonderful addition to the world culinary scene. And just had a great time. And so, I came back and I thought I'll support Scotland. But then, you know, everything you guys did, like I said in the message, all of the games that were posted, I think the SRU was the first and definitely one of the most prolific. Then, you know, we watched Scotland games, we watched Edinburgh games. Edinburgh posted a fitness regimen for lockdown. And so my wife and I were in the backyard doing the fitness regimen things that they posted. And it's just SRU and all of its clubs provided so much that helped through the lockdown that I'm a fan forever now, because it gave us a sense of normalcy, you know, something to focus on other than the fact that the world seemed to be falling apart around us. And, you know, it was just great.
That's just brilliant. Isn't it brilliant to hear? I mean, it's the reason why so much of it is done. Like, the engagement we've had with our fans has been incredible. Like, the numbers watching the games, brilliant. And games that everybody, or the vast majority of people, know the results for. We were actually on a call just this morning talking about the fact that, other than the fact we showed the New Zealand game, we're unbeaten in the last 3 months because we only put our games that we win. But the fact that it's made such a big difference is great to hear. I think there's a real look at that moving forward as well. Like, live content, you'll never replace live content. But the nostalgia element of looking back on great games has been so well received. I'm sure it's something that we'll look closely at and making sure that we continue it.
Well, I was just going to say, to the old games, they were new to me. You know, the ones from the 90s, it was great. And you get to see all these players that, you know, I listen to your podcast, I listen to a bunch of other rugby podcasts, and you hear references to people. But it's so hard to see those games, those iconic games that people always talk about when you come to rugby late in life. And so they were new to me. I mean, I was sitting there. I mean, I assumed Scotland was going to win, aside from the New Zealand game, every single one. I was like, oh, there's no real anxiety here over who's going to win, although I didn't tell my son. My son thinks that you have the greatest rugby program in the history of the world because you never lose.
Let's keep it that way with Joey. Let's keep that illusion.
Keep him in the dark.
I was going to say to you, Justin, because I believe that you're actually originally going to go to the England game in the Six Nations. Is that correct?
Yes. Yep. We were looking into tickets for the England game, and they were way too expensive to get on the secondary market. And then I sat in a pub with my son watching the game and thought, I'm so glad I didn't spend £200 sitting that rain.
And you got along to a great match at BT Murfield with France. And I just want to go back to your point earlier about, you said you'd set, you know, I think you made a, you know, whole weekend of it, a real rugby weekend. How nice was it for you and Joey and the family to have that every weekend, something to look forward to during these tough times?
Oh, it was great. My son will tell you that it's his favorite night of the week. You know, I think it's the rugby, it's hanging out with dad on the couch, but he also gets to stay up till 9 o'clock, and I let him drink chocolate milk, and he doesn't have to brush his teeth at the end. So I think that definitely contributes to it. But yeah, I mean, it was just something, a focal point on the week. You know, the weekend's always great. It was a light at the end of a weekly tunnel, because here it was, I mean, I know it was tough everywhere, but you know, for us, there was no furlough scheme, none of that. So my wife and I were both working from home 40-hour weeks, and then our son was home for homeschooling for most of that time. So, you know, you'd have to take an hour. We take an hour and a half in the morning for my wife, an hour and a half in the afternoon to do the homeschooling stuff with him because he was in first grade. And so that was tough, but also kind of a great thing that I got to spend an hour and a half with my son doing schoolwork every day. So I'm kind of grateful for that experience. But, you know, it makes for a long week when you're putting two full-time jobs plus teaching your son plus keeping him engaged when, you know, he's on this on the property here. And we just got to go send him back to a small camp. He hadn't played with another child since the second week of March up until last week. And so weeks could get long, but there was always kind of that light at the end of the tunnel. There's going to be Joey Daddy rugby night. We can sit on the couch, stay up late, you know, watch sports, hang out. So yeah, it was a light at the end of the tunnel.
And Rachel, and I'll come to you because you know, our former player, Rachel, current player. What's it like when you get these messages from fans, when people reach out to you and tell you what you're doing is so meaningful and you get messages of support? What's it like for you, Rachel?
For us, it's like a massive kind of driving force is to inspire the next generation of players. And I think to hear that about your son's really lovely, because we can kind of relate, because we've had a much bigger kind of input from fans over the last season or so, which we probably is through visibility. So to see it from us being more visible to young girls has meant that we've heard more from young girls about them taking up the sport or getting into it. So to hear something similar happening with your son's really lovely. And I'm sure some of the players that are listening and hearing that he's watching them will feel the same. So it's brilliant to hear.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably the most relatable part. Even when you're going on and you're playing, like, we were all inspired by, like, for me, it was the John Jeffries, Gav Hayes, Finn Calders. They were the heroes for me. And then when you suddenly realise you've got a bit of an opportunity to do some of that yourself, it's fantastic to be able to do it to the other side of the world through a medium of you know, digital content online, and just shows the way that everything's evolving as well. It doesn't need to be just the player appearance down at a local club doing the coaching. Like those moments that the players have created, that Rachel's continue to create, those are what inspire the next generation to pick the ball up. And if we've developed hopefully a couple of fans for life in the US, and then you can tell all your friends, I think it's a brilliant way to show what rugby can do. We need to get you down to Old Glory. You've made the trip all the way over to Scotland for that Scotland France game. I think an hour or so down the road, you've got Old Glory, and there's a reasonable Scottish contingent in there, including John Manson, who we've had on this podcast many times. But that'll be the next rugby trip for Joey when that gets back up and running.
Definitely, yeah. Plan to be hopefully season ticket holders down the road, but he is insisting after watching the games at Murray Field that's the first vacation we take after the lockdowns end and COVID is, as he puts it, when all of this COVID nonsense is resolved, We're going to go to Scotland and go to a Six Nations game, so you can count us in for the first one that's back.
Make sure and let us know when you're coming over. It'd be good, to meet you and to meet Joey as well. And see if we can make Joey's trip a wee bit more special. Maybe introduce him to some of those boys that he would now class as his heroes.
Absolutely. Oh,
definitely. Although I'd have to warn him, he'll never forgive Stuart Hogg for not scoring that try at the end of the New Zealand game. He still like says, he could have, come on, he had the ball.
Yeah. All right, I've told him the same.
Justin, it's been brilliant having you here on the podcast. Just one final question from me, and just you've watched all the games, the live games with your son Joey. What was your favourite game, or what game sticks out for you?
I think the most engaged I've ever seen my son watching a sporting event was the game against New Zealand, although the outcome wasn't what we wanted. And you know, but it's good to teach your 7-year-old that you don't always win. And you can pick yourself up. But I mean, the Calcutta Cup matches 2018, 2019 are still some of the best rugby games I've ever watched. I mean, those were fantastic. Edinburgh games just straight through were, you know, they were all enjoyable, especially the games against Glasgow. The 1872 matches were a lot of fun to watch. But yeah, I'd have to say Calcutta Cup 2018, 2019, those are just amazing games, unparalleled.
Justin, it sounds to me as if for the 1872 games that are coming up at the end of August, you're leaning east, you're leaning towards Edinburgh. Would that be fair?
I've never been to Glasgow, so I got to say, yeah, I'm leaning toward Edinburgh.
we'll need to fix that to next time you come up for a game. Get you over to the best part of the country.
Plans are in place. I've already talked my wife into a trip where we rent a narrow boat and take it along the Grand Union Canal to go Edinburgh one weekend, Glasgow the next for rugby matches and then back. So,
brilliant. That sounds so exciting. But no, brilliant to have you on the podcast. Again, thank you so much for your message. We're glad that it's made you feel some sort of normality during these difficult times. And stay safe and send our regards to Joey as well. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you in Scotland sometime soon.
Oh, my son is awake.
Yeah, I'm out.
Watching TV. I could pull him over here. Hold on. Yeah, let me pull him over here just in case.
Yeah, let's get him on.
Hello, buddy. Can you hear us?
Can you hear?
Hello.
Yep. Hi, Joey. Now, Joey, we've just been chatting to your dad about Scotland games, and I asked him a question. I asked him what his favourite Scotland game was. What was your favourite Scotland game that you watched?
Oh, great. Your dad, Joey, has given me a message to pass on to Stuart Hogg. You know Stuart Hogg, the Scotland fullback? You remember Stuart? So I'm going to pass on from you that you wished he'd run a little bit faster at the end of the New Zealand game and scored that try. So I'm going to be telling him that today all the way from America, okay?
Okay. Well, Joey, next time your dad takes you to Scotland, let us know, because Al on the podcast, he's got some really good contacts and knows all the players, so I'm sure he could try and set you up to meet some of your favourite players the next time you come over to Scotland. How does that sound?
Yay!
Right, well, I'm sure we'll try and set that up for you next time you come over. No pressure, Big Al. Yeah, sure, you sort that out for him. But, we'll make that happen for you, Joey.
We'll let you go and get your breakfast, Joey.
Enjoy, Joey. Lovely to see you, and stay safe.
Thank you guys for everything you did. I really, you know, it meant a lot to us, and we really appreciate it over here.
No, Justin, I think the fact that you took the time to reach out and tell your story is absolutely brilliant. At times you sometimes only hear things when things go badly. So to hear that it was well received on the other side of the world is fantastic for us, and it's great feedback for everybody that was involved in it. Not just the players that were playing in it, but Jamie and his team who pulled it all together as well. So no, we really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And as Jamie says, pass on our best to Joey, and we hopefully will meet him in the next short while as he maybe gets a trip over here.
Hopefully, yeah. Everybody over there, stay safe, stay healthy. And thanks again.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. But as always, we will return next week with more exclusive content.